It's my great honor and the great honor of President Cullerton to present to you a son of Illinois, the President of the United States, Barack Obama.
From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Hey! When I hear voices in either party boast of their refusal to compromise as an accomplishment in and of itself, I'm not impressed. All that does is prevent what most Americans would consider actual accomplishments, like fixing roads, educating kids, passing budgets, cleaning our environment, making our streets safe. Cuts both ways, guys. See, suddenly everybody's standing. This is fascinating to watch.
I thought a couple times he chastised the Republicans a little bit, and maybe in a speech that was about bipartisanship, maybe he just could have nipped that one in the butt.
Just because it's not the way you'd solve a problem doesn't make them a bad person, and that they may have some ideas that are actually good.
I think both sides do that. He talked about 150 people or families dominating the wealth, but those are people from both parties.
The way we respect or don't this each other as citizens will determine whether or not the hard, frustrating, but absolutely necessary work of self-government continues.
That, of course, is President Barack Obama. He made an appearance at the Illinois State House this week, addressing a joint session of the Illinois General Assembly. Also in there, you heard some reaction from lawmakers, including Springfield Republican Representative Tim Butler, also another Republican, Senator Dave Luchtefeld of Oakville, and Representative Kelly Burke, a Democrat from Evergreen Park. We'll talk about the president's appearance and more coming up here on State Week in Review. I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler. He runs the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also, Brian Mackey, our State House reporter, and down in our State House Bureau today, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio, and our guest, Monique Garcia, with the Chicago Tribune. Monique, thanks for coming on with us once again.
Happy to be here.
Brian, let me start with you. Let me ask you the purpose of President Obama's appearance. What was he hoping to accomplish when he came back to this week?
The thing he really wanted to highlight is his time as a state senator here, which he said he looks back very fondly on as a time of legislators getting to know each other, away from the glare of tweets and cable news and 24/7, slam people, politicians going on to slam each other over every little thing that happens. He said, we got to know each other, and even though we disagreed a lot, there were times when we could come together and get things done in this spirit of bipartisan cooperation. And he says that's missing now. Of course, Obama ran as a great uniter in 2007, saying that he could bring peace and some common sense to Washington. And he says one of the great regrets of his presidency is that Washington is more divided now than it was when he first ran for office. And so this is sort of the first public stop on what he says is going to be a year of his efforts to try and renew this spirit of bipartisanship across the country.
Did he accomplish that, Monique? Can you weigh in on that? Did he accomplish what he set out to do?
Well, he accomplished giving a speech. Whether or not it's going to have an impact in terms of the budget impasse we see in Illinois, it's doubtful. I mean, immediately afterwards, you had lawmakers of both parties saying that was nice, it felt good, but they went straight back to this partisan rancor that we've seen. I mean, just yesterday, Democrats revived a bill backed by unions that the governor had vetoed, and so the fighting didn't stop at all. It just kind of paused for a moment, and everyone was happy to see the president. Members of both sides largely were pretty well behaved and received him rather well, given that he is from Illinois, but it really didn't do much to move the ball forward in terms of bipartisanship here.
I mean, it's as if the stakes are so high in this point in time, both in Illinois, in Washington, D.C., and in state houses everywhere. There's this polarization that he talks about, and Obama did provide kind of a solution, and that was fourfold. He said that he wants believes that something should be done about campaign finance, and he believes that all of the dark money that goes into races and the ability of the wealthy to really dominate who is elected and who is able to make a quality run for office is a problem. He said at the same time it should be easier for people to be able to vote, and he endorsed legislation that has been sponsored in the state of Illinois that would allow for what's broadly termed automatic voter registration. Basically, when you get a driver's license renewed or you get it for the first time, you're automatically registered to vote, and perhaps that would make it easier. He talked about, in general, treating government better and members of government with more respect. That, you know, why should citizens want to get involved? Why should they vote? Why should they care if we're just lobbing insults at one another? And then last but not least, because perhaps this got the most attention, he returned to his State of the Union call for a fix to gerrymandering, quote unquote, and that is, you know, the drawing of districts. And he specifically mentioned the congressional level, although that's, of course, something that has been gotten a lot of attention in Illinois. So maybe we can talk about that. But really, to circle back to my point, it's that those are all solutions, if they were to work, that are controversial in and of themselves and will take a while to get there. So from anybody, be it, I think, Obama or any politician, hey, guys, let's all get along. Let's compromise. Let's get together. We hear that word compromise from both sides of the aisle. Bruce Rauner says it. Michael Madigan, he says, hey, we have compromised. But it's just the stakes are too huge to say, okay, we want to play and let's get along. We're going to do it right now. They're all too dug in.
But interesting, even in some of his solutions, lawmakers in Illinois are very divided.
Very.
You had Republicans clapping when he called for redistricting reform. And that's something that the legislative Democrats have largely opposed, as they don't want to give up some of their power. And then you have him talking about dark money and these large groups with lots of money financing campaigns, and then you have the governor sitting in the front row who largely self-financed his whole campaign and has a bunch of very wealthy donors financing others in the state right now. So it was a very interesting thing, as he kind of gave a bone to each party, but each party also had complaints and things they didn't like in the speech.
Well, considering that any type of redistricting change would not take effect until at least after the next census, why wouldn't Democrats go along with that? What would be the concern there on their end?
Well, the speaker has said that, he calls it Republican politics. The Democrats have done pretty well in Illinois. I mean, they have drawn the maps for this decade, certainly, and they've won the hat pull or however you want to say coin flip in the past. And I mean, there are competitive districts, though. They've also done very well in still competitive districts. I mean, a Republican governor managed to win in Illinois last year, and yet only one seat went from Democrat to Republican. So and there have been studies that these independent maps group, this is the group that's out there trying to get this constitutional amendment, says that the Democrats have more seats than the number of votes they get suggests they should have. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Moni.
I was going to say, but Obama even acknowledged later in an interview with Christy Parsons of the LA Times that this is something that needs to be attacked on a national level. So, for instance, if Illinois went ahead and did redistricting to make it more fair, and somebody like Texas didn't, then there's no incentive for parties to come together to do this together.
Yeah, right. Basically, if you did it state by state, and this is at a congressional level, then you would be, you know, if all Democratic states did it and all Republican states didn't, then it would make for an uneven playing field, and that would alter Congress further. So, but there is something to distinguish between what Obama called for, and this is where, we've kind of looked into this. How much can you say that the president and Republicans in Illinois get along? This is one of the five requirements of the quote-unquote turnaround agenda that Rauner wants passed before he'll agree to any sort of revenue increases or really working on a budget, is redistricting. What Obama did in what we're talking about with different states is congressional districts. It is, of course, however, very much the same principle that would apply to state legislative districts. So there's that. We didn't really hear much, by the way, from Bruce Rauner while pretty much everybody else came out of the speech and had a reaction, issued a statement. The governor did not. I caught him right as he was leaving, and he was really tight-lipped, only would say, good speech, and then that was it, and went down the stairs in silence. And then I do believe when he made basically similar comments when he was in Tuscola for a Lincoln Day dinner.
Right. We asked the governor's office flat out for a response, and they declined to comment, which was
interesting.
That's nice because we didn't even get a reply back. So,
Yeah, one thing to note about redistricting is what the governor is calling for, the constitutional amendment would have no impact on congressional redistricting at all. The Constitution only refers to redistricting the Illinois House and the Illinois Senate. As a matter of fact, the current congressional districts were gerrymandered to favor Democrats because Democrats controlled both chambers of the governorship after the 2010 census. In 2000, after the 2000 census, the districts were gerrymandered, but it was a bipartisan gerrymander engineered by then House Speaker Denny Hastert, a Republican, and then Congressman Bill Lipinski, a Chicago Democrat, basically to protect incumbents. And so the lines were just as screwy, the districts were just as misshapen as they are today, except then it was to protect certain incumbents and to freeze out one individual. Now it's to protect Democrats and give Democrats an edge.
And that one individual was David Phelps, right?
Yeah, from El Dorado down in southern Illinois. And so they drew a district that was mostly centered in east central Illinois. The representative then was Tim Johnson of Urbana. And there was like a little tail that dragged down the eastern border of Illinois for probably 150 miles or more, and then did a little dogleg to the west to take in just a little bubble of territory that just happened to be David Phelps' house.
Well, you know, and a friend of mine commented on Twitter that he was disappointed to hear the president make such a dumb argument about redistricting when the president complained about districts that look like spaghetti and earmuffs. And I mean, there are legitimate public policy reasons to have districts like that. The earmuff one, there's an earmuff district in Chicago that was drawn to give Latinos representation because there are significant numbers of Latinos in the Chicago area, but they don't all happen to live next to each other, right? So you have to draw districts
And the object was to, when this first occurred, and this was a couple of redistrictings ago, there was a large Hispanic community on the near north side of Chicago. At the time, it was mostly Puerto Rican. And there was a large Mexican-American community in Pilsen Little Village on the near south side. In between them was the west side, very solidly African-American. And rather than split up the African-American vote, they drew a district from North Avenue, ran out almost to, I guess, the city limits, maybe into the county line, dropped down, came back east to take in Pilsen and Little Village and have a majority Hispanic congressional district. And I think Congressman Luis Gutierrez is the incumbent there now.
And that complaint that you got, I mean, that was basically, Brian, that was over the fact that it's not about how the districts
it's
are
not
shaped.
The shapes,
it's
right?
About whether they're fairly drawn.
Exactly. And there are other things. I mean, you can have very pretty districts. Political scientists, you say you can have very pretty districts that don't necessarily make the most citizens happy, right? And there's actually an argument that says sometimes these lopsided districts are better because then at least if you have a small number of Democrats in an overwhelmingly Republican district, they're not going to feel they got cheated. Whereas if you have all your districts 51-49, you're going to have a greater number of voters who feel disenfranchised. Just one of the arguments out there against it. This is a complicated. We don't have to spend the whole show on this.
Let me add one thing, though. The problem with gerrymandering in terms of bringing together lawmakers who are willing to compromise is that when a district is heavily one party or the other, the only challenge for an incumbent comes in the primary. And so if you're a Republican, you have to be more to the right, more of a Tea Partier to be able to survive a primary challenge from the right. If you're a Democrat, you have to be more ultra-liberal to survive a challenge from the left. And so you kind of get locked into positions after the primary where it's difficult then to actually legislate and compromise and find common ground.
And that's what the president was talking about, was bipartisan cooperation. And while he was talking about a lot of serious issues, there were some moments of levity in his speech, one right here.
Where I've got an opportunity to find some common ground, that doesn't make me a sellout to my own party. That applies now. Well, we'll talk later, Duncan. You just see him.
Brian, tell us what we heard there. What was that about?
Yeah, that was Duncan refers to State Representative Ken Duncan. The brief backstory here is Democrats have a supermajority in the Illinois House on paper, but not necessarily in reality. There was a very crucial to Democrats and their allies in AFSCME, the big government employee labor union. There was a crucial vote last year, and Representative Duncan was in New York, and there was a lot of conspiracy theorizing that maybe he had made a deal with the governor, and he has since come back and sided with the governor on a couple of other issues and appeared with the governor at news conferences, and a lot of members of the Democratic caucus have been calling him a sellout or a traitor. And so when the president said, compromise doesn't make you a sellout, Representative Duncan stood up and said, that's right, that's right. And that's where you heard the little bit of hubbub. And then kind of amazingly, I don't know if the president is listening to the State Week in Review podcast or what, but he knew enough to say, we'll talk later, Duncan. And the House, I was not in the chamber, but Amanda and Monique, you were. I've heard it described as the loudest. It was like a basketball arena in there. It was so loud with people laughing
wild.
And cheering. Yeah.
It was. I think just as the speech seemed to be freeing in a sense for Obama, that he was, you know, at home and comfortable. It was like for especially Democrats, like, oh, yeah, he's on our team. Woohoo! You know, I mean, it was like a concert almost.
But it was interesting also to see the reaction of Republicans who got up and cheered at the same time for this kind of slam that the president made. And I think it was in some ways cathartic for Democrats who've known this rift, and the speaker has acknowledged this rift, saying very plainly, we don't have a working supermajority anymore. But largely, you know, there's been talk behind the scenes about him being a sellout, but they've tried to present kind of a more unified front. So to have the president come out and call him out that way, Democrats were just jolly about it.
And I think the interesting thing is, Monique said, everybody's tried to kind of almost be polite. I mean, it's not as if we've had speeches calling him a traitor on the floor. There's been a lot of very careful about how to handle this. And at the same time, that these feelings, and this was, however, brought on by Duncan himself, quite clearly. I mean, he was the one that stood up and that said, yeah, right, and tried to make it as if he was the savior and the hero. And his backers still say that. And in fact, I believe, you know, the representative on his Facebook page continued to, despite having been called out and all of us seen this, frame it as just that he is this, you know, very picture of compromise that the president was calling for. It is noteworthy, I think, how this played, however, for those who weren't able to see it. I mean, or for the, I was interested, the National Press Corps had to have been saying, we didn't talk to, what on earth is going on? I mean, in pool reports, you learn, and Illinois reporters provided a little bit of context for this, but, you know, it was, we could hear Representative Duncan say, that's right, yeah, or whatever, but we weren't allowed to stand, so it was hard to see him see. You know, you kind of had to wait a little bit for the uproar to say, oh, wait, is he standing? What is going on? And for those who were following along, they said, hey, Obama, President, you can't get up there and call for compromise. And then in that very speech, basically call somebody a sellout.
Well, and right. It's interesting because speaking to the National Press Corps, I was sitting with them, and at one point they had turned to us, the local reporters, and were like, what the heck is going on? We don't understand it. He's calling for bipartisanship, but did he really just call that guy out? And you're like, yeah, he kind of did.
And it's different, though, I think, I mean, again, what brings this beyond just a battle at the State House, this is a battle in the district, and it gets to another point that Obama was talking about, and that is the dark money that is flowing into these campaigns. And we're seeing this one race in a small part of Chicago go over the $1 million mark in spending. And there is the Illinois Opportunity Project, which is run by Dan Proft, who has a political, who has a PAC that has received a lot of money from the governor, and his PAC all of it has given $500,000 into the Duncan race.
And so, Dan Proft, we should just let people know, is a conservative. He's been around for a while. He ran for governor before. He's been a talk show host. So he's very involved in politics and this PAC that's going on. Ken Duncan, though, you're pointing out, has a primary, Democratic primary that he's up against, right?
Yeah, and the unions are trying to take him out, basically, to make an example of him. And I do just, and we probably should not spend yet another show talking about Ken Duncan, because I'm probably makes him very happy right now. But
that's true.
You know, he has now wrapped himself in this cloak of compromise. But on that first vote where he broke with the Democrats, he was in New York. It's not as though he was here to make a speech and talk about how he wanted to compromise with the governor. He just didn't show up, and he didn't have a statement prepared in advance. He stopped responding to people when people were trying to text him to find out what happened. And he has kind of after the fact wrapped himself in this cloak of compromising.
And in that particular arbitration bill, there were two other Democrats who didn't vote for the override either because they thought in principle it was not good legislation.
Right.
It's also the child care vote. I mean, it's more than just this one vote, and it's continually
It's particularly the child care,
because
his not being there made a big difference.
We've heard of lawmakers taking walks before going to New York. That's quite a walk to take, though. So, I do want to switch gears here a little bit because we have a few other things we want to get in this week. State employee unions, there's some of those that have not worked out a deal with the administration on a new contract. And lawmakers might get involved again on this issue. Amanda, can you tell us what's happening with that?
Well, so this is the Ken Duncan issue, this big arbitration vote. It seems as if there's an effort on the part of Democrats to try again, in this time in order to get it to the governor's desk, because we're in a new year and the threshold is down for the number of votes that are required to get it to that point. A full 71 is not needed, but this again puts Ken Duncan and the others on record with where they stand. Unions say that because the governor has called for an impasse, the State Labor Relations Board is still making any determinations in that, so we don't know if he will get it. But the unions are saying, see, look, this is why we need it. We want to go to arbitration, and we're giving up the ability to strike in this. The Rauner administration saying yet again that this is unfair, that this is unions trying to basically get their way instead of going forward with an agreement in terms of negotiations that they previously agreed to. So really, it just brings it all yet again to the forefront that did advance out of a House committee this week.
Right. But I'd note also, again, just that this is more political posturing. There's really no indication that there's been a huge shift in any votes, and there's unlikely to be ahead of the primary. But it's about getting people on the record. So again, it's going to be holding Ken Duncan's feet to the fire. You also, the sponsor of the bill, Representative Chris Welch, he has a Democratic primary opponent who I believe is also backed by another Rauner money group. So this is about, you know, also giving him cover. And he's had numerous endorsements from unions in the last couple weeks.
Because basically, if it were to get to the governor's desk and he vetoes it, it would need to go back for this veto proof majority. Then again, you do need the 71. And that's where Duncan and the others who didn't vote or voted no are come into the equation.
Well, even though there are a lot of people out there who probably aren't following this that closely, they may not work for state government, may not even be here in Springfield. Is there anything coming up, a deadline coming up that is really key in this situation? We know that AFSCME, for example, the largest union, has been working with a contract for several months. Is there some timeline coming up here that we should be watchful for?
It's going to be a couple months. The governor has asked the Illinois Labor Relations Board, members of whom he appoints, to rule in this to see if there's been an impasse. And that they've got several months to review the case before they even weigh in. But if they do decide that there is an impasse, it could force the union for the first time ever to decide whether or not it's going to take a strike. And that's why they view this arbitration bill as so important. They see that as kind of a last-ditch effort. They don't want a disruption of services. They don't want to say, hey, we're in such a fight that we're just not going to show up to work. They'd rather have an arbitrator come in and rule A, yes, in favor of the governor, or B, in favor of the unions, which the governor finds problematic because it only applies to his administration. And he says, you can't defend your deal in front of the labor board. You're simply trying to do an end run around me.
Well, I think one of the points in favor as a concept, and this concept does exist for law enforcement personnel who can't strike and who go to arbitration, is the theory is that in arbitration, both sides will kind of move to the middle, lest their proposal be seen as the arbitrator as so outrageous that it defaults to the other side. So it kind of brings people together. Whereas if the labor board agrees with the governor there's an impasse, that would allow the governor to unilaterally impose the most draconian terms possible, trying to force a strike to break the union.
And just you have to keep in mind the background here, which is that the governor has been very vocal about saying government labor unions are terrible. I mean, he calls them a corrupt bargain, the way they contribute to politicians. And then,
like the rich plutocrats with their billions of dollars who drop $500,000 in some legislative race.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is, you know, just saying where the governor's coming from here.
Oh, no, I know.
Clearly, but I mean, this is the backdrop that Democrats and unions are operating under, is that, you know, they are in a lot of fear of what he is trying to do.
All right. Well, let's check out our notes from the field here for this week. Brian Mackey, what do you got for us?
Yeah, I mean, there's so much. This is going to be a bit of a depressing one, but there's so much attention on the politics of this week. But there was a news story, DNA Info in Chicago had, that a young activist was killed. This is a person who was born in Chicago, raised in Virginia, came back about a year ago. He'd been active in some of the protests in the last years. He was playing video games at a house, a friend's house, and somebody else who had a beef with somebody else in the house came and shot up the house, and he was murdered. Just, you know, yet another reminder that while people are quibbling over budgets and politics here, there's a real, you know, there are serious things happening around the state that need to be taken note of.
Charlie Wheeler?
Well, the Civic Federation, which is a independent, nonpartisan government research group up in Chicago, issued a report, the fiscal 2017 budget roadmap. And to quickly summarize, they argue that we need spending cuts, but we also need more revenue. And they suggest, among other things, restoring the income tax rates to higher levels, taxing some retirement income, expanding the base of the sales tax, because they say our hole is so deep it can't be closed by cuts alone.
Amanda Vinegy, let's check in with you.
Well, the State Journal Register is reporting that the Illinois Executive Mansion Association has received a bunch of free services and also $1 million in donations last year. This, of course, is the state capitol home for the governor that governors of late may not have spent all that much time at. Governor Bruce Rauner is, though he had compared it to a frat house. But it appears as if the private fundraising to bring it into a quality state and fix that leaky roof is going well. I will add, just because this was one of the biggest shocks for me of Obama's speech, that he said he does not miss the horseshoe. And let it be known that if I ever move away from Springfield, that is one of the primary things that I would miss.
And I thought he was trying to bring people together. That's right? What I didn't understand.
Division.
With that. And Monique Garcia.
I would just like to note that the problems keep stacking up for universities in the state. So they've gone without any operating dollars since July 1. We had EIU last week announced 200 layoffs, but then this week say that they're going to also have to have employees take up to 24 furlough days. Meanwhile, SIU in Southern Illinois says they're going to have to close a business incubator, and there's really no movement to actually free up any money for colleges, so things are likely to get worse before they get better.
And Monique, just real quick, there have been no more negotiations on that you're hearing around the Capitol?
Well, we have that bill that's still pending before the governor, which would free up some money for MAP grants and for operational dollars for community colleges. But the governor has threatened to veto that. Democrats haven't even actually sent him the bill yet, saying they wanted to give him more time. And the day that they're going to send it to him happens to be the day before next week's budget address.
So we'll be hearing more about that for sure next week, when university students are set to hold a couple of press conferences and maybe a rally at the Capitol.
And as you mentioned, the governor will be delivering his budget next week, and we will talk more about that on the next State Week in Review. I'm Sean Crawford for our broadcast today. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, the director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS, Amanda Vinicky, Brian Mackey, and the Chicago Tribune's Monique Garcia. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org or search WUIS on iTunes.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.